Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Did you babysit or do you babysit for your grandkids? Is that an issue or do you enjoy it? And should you be compensated for it? We kind of started this conversation on Friday. We thought we would get an expert on the phone today. And my favorite life coach is Stephanie O'Day. She's got a podcast, Slow Living with Stephanie O'Day. How are you today, Stephanie?
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing well. So we got a lot of text messages about this topic about getting paid for watching your grandkids. And there are so many questions surrounding it, but let me read you a couple of these. Grandparents who would like compensation for childcare, how about the guilt that comes with that? Somebody brought that up. Being the disciplinarian and not the warm hug, you know, when you should be making cookies and being the sympathetic ear, now we're the disciplinarians. Also, somebody tweeted, I can't find it here. Oh, I'm a retired teacher and granny. The use and value of my years of experience is offered to my grandchildren gratis. Another person said, this is the legacy I leave to them. But somebody else said, here's the deal. I paid for their college. I paid for their expenses after college. And now they're working full time and they want me to work for free watching their children, my grandchildren. I feel I should be compensated. How could you broach that conversation?
I absolutely agree with all of those sentiments. And it's interesting, Lisa, I have a 20-year-old daughter, so we'll have to match up my daughter with your son. But I have a light at the end of the tunnel, and you must be starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel also.
Yes.
So I do think when you bring children into the world, you need to budget properly and pay attention. And absolutely, daycare is an expense that you have to plan for and pay attention to. And if you have grandparents who are offering out of the kindness of your heart, of their heart to help, take them up on it. But don't expect them to drop their life and their retirement and their golden years to help raise the next generation.
Because they are giving up their life. If you're working 8 to 5 and they've got your kids from 7 to 6, that's a big job.
It is a big job. It absolutely is a big job. So I think it all comes down to open communication and having clarity with expectations. A random date night babysitting here and there, absolutely. Offer out of the kindness of your heart. But if you're giving up travel, if you're giving up yoga in the park and all of the things that you thought you would get to do because now you're toddler wrangling, I think that is absolutely a very valid point. And you can look at it a few ways. You can look at it as, I actually need this money and I want to be compensated for it. Or you can accept perhaps something in exchange, like maybe housekeeping if you're using your house and now it's getting trashed again by toddlers and preschoolers, or maybe you'll accept your groceries being paid for or a meal delivery service. It doesn't necessarily have to be cash, but the token needs to be acknowledged. You're giving up an awful lot of time, and now you can't just go drop everything and take a cruise or something because you get this email
right,
saying that everything's on sale for the ARP members.
Yeah, that's so true. So part two of this equation is how do you talk to your daughter or your son about your parenting style versus their parenting style? Because quite often the answer is, look, I raised you and you're fine. So don't tell me that I have to, you know, do X, Y, and Z because that's the new parenting method.
Absolutely. So when it comes to safety, you need to follow the new rules. You absolutely need to have an upgraded car seat. You need to follow the back to sleep and all of that kind of stuff. When it comes to discipline and things like that, there needs to be a meeting of the minds in the middle. And children at a very young age quickly figure out there are different rules at home than there are at grandma's house. Mm-hmm. There's different rules at kindergarten than there are at soccer practice. And paying attention, being very clear and precise. And then also, if your parents are helping, and especially if they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart, you've got to let some of your expectations go and just be thankful.
It's hard, though. It's really hard. That's the problem, and I would imagine that's usually what leads to uncomfortable situations between both parties.
Yeah. And any, you know, parenting is tricky. Generations of guilt and upbringing. Some people still have not healed from past wrongs that they think that their parents may have done or embarked upon them. And those are real things. But put it all out on the table. And if you have too many rules and guidelines, then maybe asking mom to do this for you is not the right thing. And you should pay somebody and get exactly what you want.
Great advice from life coach Stephanie O'Day. And where can people find you online, Stephanie?
Sure. The podcast is the Slow Living Podcast. And I'm spelled Stephanie O'Day, STEPHANIEODEA. com.
Thank you so much. Have a beautiful holiday.
You too.
And I don't know, I say holiday because I don't know if you celebrate Christmas, we've not met, or if you've previously celebrated Hanukkah, but whatever it is, I hope you have a beautiful end of the year.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to 2022. I really am. I'm ready to flip that calendar page over.
I'm with you on that. It's a time of year that a lot of us look forward to, but there are some people that suffer from what are called the holiday blues. Is that you? I talk to a lot of people that go, this is not my favorite time of the year. I'm Lisa Dent in for Anna DeVlantis, and joining us is Dr. John Duffy, parenting expert, author, and clinical psychologist. And Dr. Duffy, there's really not a medical diagnosis. Like, the holiday blues is just something we talk about and we feel, but it's really not recognized as something that most people, like, it's not in the medical journals, is it?
It is not, Lisa. You're absolutely right. The closest we come is probably seasonal affective disorder, but even that doesn't really capture specifically what's going on in these couple of weeks right here, where people either feel, it's almost binary, where people either feel like kind of this elation or this kind of malaise, these holiday blues, right? This kind of like holiday-related depression that comes along when the decorations go up, and during these weeks when families are getting together and, you know, celebrations are happening all around us.
And you're expected to be happy. You know, they're like, come on, what's the matter? Smile, it's the holidays. And there are people that just can't get through it. Some of that is childhood trauma, right? Or different life experiences that did not bring them joy over the holidays. Do you think there's ever a time that it will be included in medical journals, not necessarily called the holiday blues, but, you know, this disorder, this feeling that people get around this time of year?
It's a good question, Lisa. I can imagine that will show up in the International Classification of Diseases and Mental Disorders for sure at some point. We're very deft at finding ways to get things in there in the first place. But also, you're right that, you know, there is this expectation that we feel good this time of year. And that's part of what perpetuates the holiday blues for so many people, because those expectations aren't met. So I'm not sure we're looking at an actual disorder, even though I think it will be classified as one at some point, but really just a phenomenon that we run into because our expectations don't meet what we expect.
I was actually at a holiday gathering with friends over the weekend, and the person hosting the gathering, all of a sudden I realized, like, you could see in her face, everything had changed. All of a sudden she wasn't happy, and she and her husband lost their 29-year-old son in an accident about a year and a half ago. And this is a very difficult time for her and for others who may have lost their only child like they did, or someone that they loved dearly during the holidays, and they just can't shake the fact that that person should be here but is not here, and that itself brings on sadness.
Oh, I cannot tell you, Lisa, how many times I work with families who have experienced the loss either around the holidays or during that year or in their family in the past few years. And those losses, our feelings tend to get amplified around the holidays. So our feelings of joy Sure, they get amplified, but our feelings of grief and sadness and loss, that all kind of comes to the forefront around the holidays because we're very aware of that empty seat at the table, right? And that person who's just not there, that joke that's not being told, or whatever their presence brought, that absence speaks very loudly and tends to take over, just like what you're describing.
Yeah, right in the middle, you know, of a party. I just saw it. I saw it was like the blood drained from her face when she realized, you know, what was going on. Dr. John Duffy is a parenting expert and author and a clinical psychologist. If you got a question, you can chime in at 312-981-7200. So the hope, Doc, that we all held for a return to normal is kind of being dashed. And, you know, the stress of, like, who's going to be at the table? And have they been tested or have they been vaccinated? And it seems like we looked forward to a Christmas that was going to be a lot different. And in some ways, it's the same of what we dealt with last year. We just don't seem to have control of it, and it's out of our hands. How do you manage that nervousness, that anxiety of, if I invite people into my house, am I going to get sick? Are they going to get sick?
Right. It's so difficult because you have all these differing opinions based on different information, and people are trying to navigate with family members with different personalities around, like, what's reasonable, what's acceptable. Some people are trying to do this calculus about, you know, contact tracing and get three or four people down the line and realize, oh my gosh, I think we might not be able to get together as a family for the holidays. And people so desperately want, you're right, this to be normal. People are exhausted and they're sad and they're tired and they just want something to feel normal again. So it feels kind of particularly cruel this Christmas that this, you know, Omicron decides to show up right around now and really wreak havoc, because, you know, there is no clean way to make these decisions. And I think we kind of have to just decide how you're going to do this and have with as safe an approach as you can muster and with as much respect for one another as you can muster. Because I've been working with families who are at odds with one another about whether it's safe or whether it's okay, or we didn't do this last year, so we have to do this year. And the worst, that's to me, is the worst case scenario for what can happen within a family, is that you go to war over whether you should get together or not, when in fact it seems like everybody pretty much wants to.
Yeah, that really is a topic of discussion among many families this week as we gather for Christmas. Coming up next, Dr. John Duffy I hope you'll be able to answer these, but, you know, if you're the grandparent who wants a hug from the grandchild you don't often see because of COVID, or maybe you're the uncle or the aunt and that child doesn't want to hug you, he'll tell you what you need to do in that situation. And maybe you can address why kids save their worst behavior, their bad behavior, for when it's most effective. And that's in front of other family members or at the shopping mall or wherever it might be. He is a parenting expert, an author, and a clinical psychologist. I'm Lisa Dent in for Anna DeVlantis. And on the phone with us is Dr. John Duffy. He is a parenting expert and a psychologist. And if we're sad over the holidays, obviously our children pick up on that, and that changes their whole mood as well, right?
100%. I mean, you know, that's one thing I wanted to make sure we emphasized here, is that as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, we set the tone. So our kids are going to follow in our footsteps. If there is sadness, tension, depression, anxiety in the room, kids will note that and they will follow that lead. So be really aware of the vibe that you put out over the next week or two, because you are probably going to see something of the same in the kids around you.
Now, I know when you've got kids, and mine's 20 now, but, you know, there are moments where you're shopping, doing the last minute hustle and bustle of the season this week, and, you know, they're out of school, so you bring them with, and they have a complete meltdown in a store. And you're like, come on, we're fifth in line. Can we just hold on to it? And often it's because they're tired, but sometimes it seems like they save their bad behavior for when they want your attention the most.
100%. And they absolutely do. That is not a riddle. We know this. There's research that backs this up, Lisa, so you're right on. What we would differ on is the approach. A lot of parents want to kind of take that child aside, lecture hard right in that moment, or overly give in to whatever it is that child wants. Bribery becomes like, one of the approaches the parents want to use. But typically, when a child exhibits bad behavior in a social setting, in a public setting, there's something going on underneath the surface. They might be tired, young kids. They might be experiencing some degree of social anxiety, some discomfort of some kind. So if you have the ability to take that child aside for a moment, give them just a moment of your time, room to breathe, skip the lectures, you might be able, and more often than not, I would argue you would be able to circumvent some of that tantrum behavior, and you're kind of laying down a path for how to handle this going forward, should this happen again, which in all likelihood it will.
Dr. John Duffy is a parenting expert, author, and clinical psychologist, and I would imagine you see children in clinic. I mean, it seems like most kids in their late teens and early 20s consider therapy a part of good health. But are you starting to see young kids as well?
We are. More and more we are seeing younger and younger kids. You're exactly right, first of all. The kids in their teens and early 20s, the taboo around psychotherapy is evaporating quickly, and I think that's a very, very positive thing. Among even younger kids, tweenage kids, even younger kids than that, 8, 9, 10 years old, there are kids asking to go to therapy. And I think part of that is positive because they're seeking help and they're tending to their emotional well-being. Part of that I worry about a little bit because they see on TikTok or other social media, or they hear about on kids' television, they hear about mental health and they identify with depression or anxiety or attention problems or eating problems. And that worries me a little bit because when young kids over-identify with a problem, that becomes part of their identity. And that worries me a little bit because that tends to stick and linger well into the teen years when we prefer their identity be more emotionally healthy than that.
Interesting. I'm glad you addressed that. Yeah. Dr. John Duffy is on the phone with us. And Doc, what happens when, we've all learned, because when I was young, you were told to hug somebody and it didn't make any difference whether you wanted to hug them or not. Especially it was like, well, I haven't seen that person in 2 years and they're going to pat me on the head and say I'm tall and I don't want to do it. But I was forced to do it. Now we know not to force your child into hugging, but how do you manage the situation when it's an adult, whether it's a grandparent they haven't seen for a year because of COVID, and kids change dramatically in the course of a year at certain ages, or maybe it's an uncle or an aunt. How do you address that situation, hugging during the holidays? And we have COVID, so that helps break it down a little bit. Like, oh no, we're going to keep our distance.
right. That does give our kids like kind of an instant kind of excuse to step away from the hug for sure this year. But I don't know we're going to get that last next year. I'm hoping not. But broadly speaking, you're asking a really important question because you're right. When most of us grew up, I mean, if we were told to hug an aunt, an uncle, a grandfather, or a grandmother, we did that or we were in trouble, mm-hmm. And the tables have turned so dramatically where kids are now told for cause, like, people need to ask permission to hug you. And so what we want to do is we want to empower our young kids to be able to take control of that moment. And that's tricky too, because you can't say, Grandpa, you need to ask permission to hug me, unless that's what you want to train your kids to do. So think about what messages you want your kids to give the adults around them in order to lay down healthy boundaries and empower your kids to do it. Too often I see parents doing this for kids, like, no, Grandpa, you're going to have to ask whether she wants to hug you or not. I think it's a far more empowering thing that the kids are able to say, well, if you ask, I might want to hug you, and that might be a little off-putting to Grandpa, but it empowers kids to lay down these physical boundaries that will become important to them at some point in the not too distant future in their lives, unfortunately.
And, you know, it was different maybe in many people's life experiences where your grandpa was your grandpa, but now maybe grandma is married for the third time and he's, you know, you don't really want to consider him grandpa. So, you know, you do feel odd hugging somebody like that. And if you're at a certain age, you shouldn't be forced to do it. So any other information you want to give people who are suffering from the holiday blues? We've got about a minute left. Is there something that you could offer people to maybe help lift their spirits or give them hope that they'll get through it?
Yeah. First of all, think about what your expectations are and make sure they're reasonable for the next week or two. And if you need to come up with a plan for how you're going to spend this time so that you don't get too lonely, definitely do that. Connect where you safely can. Don't be afraid to ask the people you know for some help and for some connection, whether that's via Zoom, whether that's going out for coffee if that's safe, whether that's just taking a walk. And for those of us who are fortunate enough to be surrounded by loved ones and family, reach out to anybody you know who might be lonely and be the person who alleviates that for them. That's a huge gift that you can give someone around this time of year.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, Dr. John Duffy. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Merry Christmas, Lisa. Thank you.